new political force has been slowly emerging in Tynwald, and this week's perspective tries to discover what it's all about. Definitely not a political party, possibly a loose political alliance, but certainly made up of MHK's Claire Christian, Julie Edge and Chris Thomas. So what do they stand for? How will they deliver change? Are their ideas relevant to the needs of the Manx public? Claire Christian and Chris Thomas join me in the studio to reveal all. You appear to be coalescing around some sort of an alliance. Where are we at with that?
If I may go first, Chris, I think it's been quite obvious to certainly as backbenchers that we do need to work together a lot more, and certainly, you know, we're used to sort of agreeing with our sort of similar policies over the past couple of years, but this seems to be now forming into what we hope is just a policy direction, an alternative sort of policy direction for myself and Chris and also Julie Edge, who couldn't make it today, but and other backbenchers that want to that might agree with us. But we're starting to formalise that a little bit more and to try and give the public an idea about where the backbenchers feel that the government should be tidying up and moving in a more clearer direction.
So at the moment the alliance is three.
Yeah, and I think that's safe to say it's three of us at the moment. Yeah.
But I don't think you should focus on people, because I think what Claire also said very clearly in that is, of course, we're working with others. So the people we're working with on some of the bills that are going through the House of Keys at the moment is much more than three. And this morning, two other backbenchers phoned me for thoughts on motions they're thinking of doing. And I think what you heard from Claire then was this is policy centred. It's not people centred. Yeah. So therefore, we're clearly not a political party. We're not supporting or endorsing each other or any other candidates. We're not going to register as a political party. What we are is we're trying to have an influence on the way that policy is developing now and develops in the future. There are other people who've already told Manx Radio and other media outlets that they don't, you know, necessarily want to work in formal alliances, but they're perfectly good for political policy alliances, and you know that's what we're trying to get in on.
Okay, so you are an alliance of three. You are up against the other alliance in the House of Keys, of course, is the Council of Ministers, and there are nine of those. There are also a whole string of departmental members who are associated with the Council of Ministers. It's pretty much a David and Goliath situation then, is it?
I think that's correct. And you know, last week we had a listening to you roadshow from government, for which there was rooms hired. There were lots and lots of staff supporting them. There were policy papers being written. That doesn't happen if you're working outside government. But the strength we've got is we can genuinely coordinate and we can have discussions, frank discussions with each other. So I know that we still disagree on lots of things, but what it is we're challenging each other and perhaps causing each other to think about things. We're working with colleagues beyond us to bring them in line with certain policies. The discussion I was having this morning was about housing with another backbencher for a motion in June. I was having another discussion yesterday about assisted dying and to help support a motion. I think Claire does that all the time with other people. So think of it as policy and campaigns. The election now is only 2.5 years away. This Council of Ministers came together after the election with the Chief Minister asking, giving a senior role to the person he'd just been up against in the Chief Minister elections. I tried to move that we should have a question time on the floor of the House of Keys so we could the public could see what policy matters were important to us and what was going to be. But essentially it was a blind date between the electorate and the government. We've still got huge tensions inside the Council of Ministers over the gas issue, over rates reform, over public sector pensions, and they will come out. They will inevitably come out. And what this time we need to do is to make sure that over the next few years, the public agrees with the people who get elected and how form the government, I think, more about the real challenges and how to actually tackle them.
Claire Christian, One thing that surprised me when I interviewed the Chief Minister just over a month ago, Chief Minister was keen to put forward this, we're having a reset, you know, it's we need to better explain what our policies are, we need to be clearer about where we're going. Bearing in mind this was what this whole interview was about, it was resetting government's priorities. I asked the Chief Minister, I asked him whether he believed in his policies and strategies, and his answer was quite surprising in that he said, they're not my policies and strategies, they are the policies and strategies of the Council of Ministers, which is a bit surprising, because you would kind of imagine that the Chief Minister would be keen to promote the policies of his government. But of course it is different, isn't it? I mean, it's not as simple as this is the policy of the government, this is my policy, because of course the Chief Minister is one of nine in Council of Ministers who decide what that policy is, and collectively they make that decision. They don't always, well, the Chief Minister, for example, doesn't always get his way. Obviously that's pretty much where you are in terms of the alternative policy group.
Yeah, I think it's I think what's easy to do is to criticise, you know, the current government. It's easy to do that, but I think what we're really trying to do is just to take ourselves away from that constant criticism and actually say, look, you're doing this part well, but actually we want to do this part better. And I agree with the Chief Minister in the sense that policy isn't just one person, it has to be a collective, usually, because the people are the collective, and it's drawing out those opinions from your constituencies and having and coming together and drawing a policy that's combined, and sometimes people won't agree and sometimes people will, but it does, you know, it does make it very difficult in the sense that, you know, I remember certainly back to the beginning of this administration, it was far more collegiate with the backbenchers. We were, you know, had many workshops, and they were really productive and did help to steer the government, I think, in the right direction. I would like to see more of that, working with, for the likes of Chris and et cetera, and I and other backbenchers, you know, really sort of looking at prior to it coming to Tynwald, where it's a sort of cut and dry, we're voting for this and we've got our votes and that's that, and you've got enough members in the department to make it sway. Is that the right policy? And one of the reasons I'm really strong about us all looking at it as a collective is because we constantly looking at things individually and in silos, constantly debating things in silos, and that's probably driven around the likes of the budget, which is, it's a real shame that the budget can't be changed so that we stop working in silos, stop the departments working in silos. You know, to give you, just to give a sort of a small example of that, you raising bus fares for school children, but you could have, say, made that saving of £45,000 perhaps elsewhere, perhaps in the DfE for TT tickets for the hospitality suite, you know, where they're spending over £200, or, you know, you could have probably made that very, very, in a very small amount. So it's kind of looking at that sort of social policy, but looking at it together, you know, as... I certainly wouldn't go, you know, I have a budget, my own personal budget. That flexes within each month, doesn't it? You have a certain amount for your food, you have a certain amount for your electricity, but that might actually flex within that month. And I think we need to see more of that just as a more holistic approach, where we look at everything and say, well, what is this more important than this? And at the moment, because it's working singularly in departments, it means that we're not getting that overall broad aspect. So I'd really like to see the government develop that, and Treasury develop how we could move forward in that way. And actually, as a whole, as in Tynwald, or prior to that and prior to that, look at what are the priorities for the people and priorities for us as Tynwald.
government seems to have gone off the idea of a single legal entity. Is that effectively what you're suggesting?
I'm not describing a single legal entity. I'm describing a budget process that we stop looking at individually. But it could move to a single legal entity. But we have to do these things first. We have to have a budget process that works right for people and policy, and at the moment it doesn't. It's working in isolation. So that's something that can happen without a strong move to the single legal entity.
So to pick up on what Claire said, what you've started with is something around fiscal accountability and the use of public funds, which is the number one strategic objective for government in the Ireland Plan. Never used to have a strategic objective inside the plan. We're glad that it did, so we're welcoming that. We're welcoming the fact that they went out on the road to talk with people about priorities. What we would say additional to that is we have some suggestions for how the budget should be reformed. And beyond that, I think I'm prepared to say that there is a possibility, because it has happened before in COVID, for instance, we could have an emergency budget in the autumn. And if that's necessary, so be it, it's necessary. So, for instance, 11 members of the House of Keys voted for David Ashford's amendment to put back the taxation strategy till 2025, which is quite damning of what's going on around public finance and taxation. And we want to get hold of that. And I know Claire's got some strong views on how we should look at relook at taxation. And to add to that, I think building on what Claire said, every little item of expenditure has got to be prioritised against each other, whether it be revenue or capital. At the budget, it felt like the most important thing in the world was a southern swimming pool. It might not be when people know where that money is coming from. It might be that where that money is coming from is even more important. It might be a falling down school somewhere else. It might be a link span that's about to fall over and we won't have boats for a few months or something like that, except on an ad hoc arrangement. So we've got to prioritise capital expenditure, revenue expenditure in exactly the right way. And what unites us at the moment, most importantly, I think, is that we want practical, people-centred solutions to make things better for people. We're not driven by ideology. We don't talk about trickle-down economics versus, you know, against trickle-down economics. We want to make things better so that people are getting the things that they want in their lives that make things better, and they feel as if they're public funds, whether it be ratepayers' money or taxpayers' money or things they pay for as charges, that it's actually going on the health that they want the public to be providing and healthcare that they want the public to be providing and so on and so on.
I think from my feeling, the reason why the council of ministers have gone out over the last couple of weeks to listen is and it's really important that they have, and I think it was well received. Yes, there were obviously people who had a lot to say and were frustrated. But I think the actual fundamental of that was a good measure, a good practice. But I think sometimes when we use terminology like emergency budget, suddenly we feel we're in some kind of catastrophe. So actually, could it just be more strategic budget? We're just realigning. We're actually, 6 months ago, we need to be more agile as a government. We need to be more agile to the public. We've now gone out, asked them. I'd like to see the changes now to the prioritisation. What is government really seeing over the last couple of weeks? And perhaps that means a strategic budget to sort of draw the answers and help those people that have come forward and said they need support.
It is fair to say that the budget was met with some measure of dismay by the public in particular, and not least on this first reprioritisation of council ministers, which was fiscal responsibility. I mean, I think most members of the public would have thought, well, for goodness sake, surely every department of government is fiscally responsible, and surely every minister is getting grilled on at least a monthly basis by the Treasury Minister as to how their budgets are going, and are they going to come in and within budget? So why is this suddenly becoming a new priority? As if this is something novel and different?
And that's what we tried to say in a question time recently. Basically, it seems the way the Treasury Minister presented that everything that's gone wrong has been Treasury's fault that it's gone wrong, because he's more or less said all the responses are Treasury is going to have a quarterly management accounting. So it can't be that. It's got to be about the people getting involved in prioritisation. And I think there was a backlash against the budget because it was raising taxes, but nothing extra was being got for those taxes, and there was a perception that not enough was being done to cover costs. And then since then, and a quarter of the members of the House of Keys voted against the budget, which is, you know, more or less unprecedented in the ministerial era, and it goes back to the 1980s when that number of people went against it. And as I said to you, 11 people put off the taxation strategy till 2025. So that moves on to economic strategy.
Before we move on, let's just focus on this. If you know, you're an alternative policy group, you know, the top and the bottom of it is, the reason that departments overspend is because there's no requirement on them to cut services. Nobody's saying we should reduce the amount of services that government provides. There's only a finite amount of money available. That is divvied out at budget time. But departments are effectively saying, our budget wasn't big enough, so we're okay to overspend.
Answer. Phil, you go back to the beginning of this administration, you come up with an island plan, which I very vocally said this was a vision. It was, you know, in the desert. It wasn't achievable. They had no.
And you said it would become a mirage.
You know, it had no fiscal accountability attached to it, or how much it was going to cost. And it was this dream. And I understand why we as an island must promote ourselves, and this is what we're aiming for. And I do get that. But the problem is if you say you're going to solve X, Y and Z and actually you don't solve that by the end of the administration, if you don't, everybody doesn't have a house, as they, I think one of the original sentences it said. But, you know, that's the problem. So you have a budget. If that budget isn't aligned with an island plan, let alone the department plans, then of course, that's going to be really difficult for anybody to achieve as a business. And I know the government isn't a business, but as a business, you don't say, I'm going to, for me, build 300, you know, fashion stores if I don't have the money to build those 300 fashion stores. And ultimately, it's simple as that. And then what happens is political influence happens, Phil. So you have individual areas, the south, you know, the north, the east, the west, that their prioritisation. But again, we're not looking at this as a whole. We're constantly looking at individual examples, like, for example, the Southern Swimming Pool or wherever. We're looking at them individually, not as a whole. What's right for the whole of the island? And that's where we need to become more national politicians and policy.
So in terms of the actions that make us different, what we've said is we want to say very clearly there is this financial gap, this public financial gap. We need to keep saying over and over again that there is this financial gap, and we've got this amount of time to actually prioritise capital expenditure. So if Castle Russian High School can't be the number one priority and can't definitely get financed, but we're going to pretend it is up to the election, we've got to be honest and say that we actually have a funding review of education, and this and this and this needs to happen before. And that we've got a question coming up to draw that out, because I think government is considering some quite unauthorised. Some novel funding approaches, two things like Castle Russian High School, which the public needs to know about in advance rather than being surprised, because that links with Manx Development Corporation and the approach to the steam packet and the like.
Tell us about these unorthodox...
It's just the Treasury Minister hints at it all the time, but we need to be honest. He talks about alternative financing strategies, which presumably, by which he means public finance initiatives and then borrowing more money and all of those sorts of things, which have not been the Manx way. So we need to draw that out in public, and then we need to get to the public on our side to say we are doing our bit with saving costs, we aren't duplicating with fighting between departments, and, you know, ultimately we'll say it, because we told the trade unions we're going to say it. It's going to involve some job cuts. So that burning platform that you and I have heard about for 20 years is actually much closer than it ever has been before.
So what do we mean by, you know, I guess you probably hear people say streamlining government, reducing government. So what do we mean by that? So that's focusing on staffing efficiencies and flexibility within the organisation. We proved in COVID that we can flex our departments or staff from department to department. We should be doing that, especially at stress points, different types of stress points when that happens throughout the organisation. I would also suggest that in terms of the people are constantly saying, what are you doing about the size of the government? We now need to look at how we justify the size of the government and where we do want to increase. And look at how it's not just accountability for fiscal accountability. We also want to look at accountability for the size of government. And reducing size, absolutely, that's what we believe in. How we do that, how we increase cost efficiency, that's absolutely something that with the CEOs we should be working with, and we should be giving them a direction. Every private organisation at some point has to make cutbacks, has to do, and I'm not saying services, because you know that's something we should try and avoid before we do the tax increase. And that's something that was really strongly put across by the public over the last couple of weeks, and certainly to us during the budget, and certainly to us during the tax strategy, that actually, what did we do internally? And if we did do that, did we communicate it well? Because I didn't hear anything. I didn't hear how we were being far more cost efficient. So can we improve that? What can we do? What are the strategies? And to come up with that very, very quickly so that we can do a strategic budget where we reduce that 2% back down, get more money back into the public's pocket, find that 20 million from somewhere else within government. That's what we've got to do.
So in very specific points, just give you two examples. Building on that healthcare levy, there was an alternative, which Claire already got and Tim Wall to accept, which is this levy charge on people, and some people arriving in the island. It won't meet the whole gap, but it'll contribute. And that's what Claire successfully was working with in the team. We got through Tim Wall, and we got a report back, I think it's in July, from government about that healthcare levy. Another way you can think of it is being, we've got an incredibly complicated arrangement with Island Infrastructure Scheme and Manx Development Corporation, where we're paying money to an agency to pay to the private sector to come and deliver something that we could have just delivered ourselves. If it's so important, you know, why are we paying money to a private developer through the DfE to contribute to better bus facilities? It's just daft if you look at it like that. So therefore, there's lots of opportunities. We're working with public servants, because I think public servants are a bit confused, as they have been for quite some time now. You know, they keep getting buffered between different politicians, and what they want is they want clear objectives to deliver them, and that's what we're trying to contribute towards.
You're listening to Perspective with MHK's Claire Christian and Chris Thomas. You seem to be saying there that you want to cut budgets, but you're not going to cut services. In relation to the economic strategy, how would your policies differ to what council ministers' plan is, which is effectively we need to grow the economically active population to get a rebalance between the economically inactive, which is a growing number, and the economically active, which sadly has diminished in certainly recent years.
So I think if I may, Chris, just talk a little, I'm glad you brought up the economic strategy. So fundamentally, increasing the concept of increasing the population, economically active population, yes, of course, that is the right solution. So I do fully agree with that. But it's the steps that we've taken prior to that. Again, have they been enough? Because the public feel that the services aren't, you know, we haven't got enough services for the current people that are currently living here. And they're very frustrated with the thought of people coming from, 5,000 more economically active people, 15,000 people in total over the next 10 years. Where are they going to go? Where are they going to live? How are they going to fit in with, you know, higher GP appointments? You know, it's really difficult for people to foresee that's the right solution. So I can completely understand it. So what makes us different? I think it's important to say that, looking at sort of small areas like from the economic strategy where KPMG advised that revising the tax system to attract and retain young individuals. So we're losing people.
Because the very opposite seems to have happened.
And that's not encouraging necessarily 5,000 people. It's encouraging people within the island to retain them. And they suggested increasing the personal allowances for lower to middle to income earners. That was actually in the economic strategy, but it was completely devoid in the current tax strategy or the budget. And so that doesn't seem to marry up and match up. So again, it's just where we're saying, come on, a government, this was part of the strategy. We need to make sure we stay on line with that.
So why then has that the advice of KPMG, I mean, a lot of money was spent getting that advice. Has government given any hint as to why it hasn't?
Well, I think you'll have to ask them that. You know, we can say what we hope we would like to see them, you know, us do, the island move forward. But, you know, for the government, they need to answer why they didn't do that.
But I don't want to leave it that you've said that we don't believe in cutting services. I'm going to give you a whole list of services now that I do think we could cut, and I want to link it to where we are in this discussion. So the first one is we do spend a reasonable amount of money on trying to encourage people to relocate here. Call me old-fashioned, but the best way to get somebody to want to relocate here is for them to want to relocate here, because our island is buzzing and booming and we've got lots of opportunities in our public sector, our private sector. You know, housing's great, the land scale's great. So there's a service that I think we could reduce. Likewise with business, sometimes I think that the DfE now thinks it exists to give advice to business, whereas at my heart I know that the DfE exists to do what's necessary in terms of law and markets and all that to help business flourish. It's not to give advice to business people from civil servants and so on. Likewise, I often think that lots of DHSC staff time might be taken up with, you know, squabbling with people, with Manx Care and with Braddon Parish commissioners and the like in Treasury. You know, why do we subsidise rural parishes so much with collecting rates and things? There are lots of parts of government that I think we need to look at objectively, and I'm sure there's room in lots of those areas for getting to those efficiencies. And for me also, if the public accepts it, we can also change expectations about the delivery of services. You know, healthcare is becoming so much more complicated that I do think we have to have an honest dialogue about that.
You're right. Making efficiencies within government would mean that some services would be reduced. But I'm not saying I'm suddenly going to reduce the bus service. What I'm saying is specifically, and I'll give you an example as well. So in the UK, you have a automatic tax return system. I lived there for 20 years, so I know I never had to fill out a tax return form. It was just automatically happened. Unless I earned over, you know, had an income from somewhere else, then I would have to do that. They automatically... The service that provides, we actually have to, each and every one of us have to fill out a tax return form, send it in or do it online. And that's pensioners, everybody. And it's quite frustrating that I see we have this archaic system that's time consuming, that has members of staff that are involved. And actually, making it automated in the same way that's been there in the UK for years could make some things more efficient, and that's where we really should be focusing on as a it's operational, it's not policy, Phil, but these are operational things that we need to be. Here's a timeline of how we're going to make government more efficient to be more cost effective, and that's what we need to see and hear. Where are these ideas? Where, across government, let's pull them together, let's see a list. That's what I want to see, so that the public can see that, so that they know that the government is actually doing that.
And so from my side, we've got the Manx Development Corporation that's got access to £100 million of borrowed money for a few years. And we've got the talk of a housing association, and the chief ministers with the Minister of Infrastructure in Jersey, presumably talking with Andium and looking at the Jersey Housing Association. But I'm absolutely sure that they haven't been out asking Castletown commissioners how to run all their houses, and Douglas Council and Ramsey commissioners and Peel and the ports and so on, which would be really valuable, because they'll find that there's lots of experience and knowledge. They much prefer to have 100 million with a max development, and that's for their savings there. And the public now knows very much that we've got £100 million economic strategy fund. You know, it's just a big number. It's not the way we used to do things. What we want to do is, you know, several million of that is for a Jerby water main. Was that the national priority? I don't think so, because people still prefer to live in different places, it seems. And that's why one of our first interventions, I think, needs to be out west, because we've got a huge number of houses envisaged in the north and the west plan. Housing and planning are very important aspects of frustration in the Isle of Man, and I think that's where we need to build a consensus to make sure we get the right strategic plan in place 2021 to 2041 with a proper understanding of housing need, a proper understanding of the viability for private developers of the development and the future.
And yet you were the chair of the Housing and Communities Board, and most people looking for houses wouldn't be able to point to much that's changed as a result of that.
Yeah, and what the Chief Minister has said, you know, is the most important thing is the housing association, and the fact that you get first-time buyers through the 25% normal requirement unless there's a commuted sum. And he now understands the current situation, and we would do things differently in housing, and I think you'll find that the Housing Communities Action Plan would have it doing differently, because obviously I resigned from that role in July 2023 because of policy differences with the Chief Minister. So that's what, you know, I don't want to, going back to right at the beginning of the conversation, but you were making out the Chief Minister doesn't have any power. He does have power. He goes to the Governor and says, appoint this person as Minister. The Chief Minister and I disagreed on housing policy, on policy towards the gas field, and on various other things that are emerging. So therefore, I was gone as a minister. I think the same thing probably happened to Minister Edge. The same thing probably happened to Minister Collister. So therefore, the Chief Minister does have the power to hire and fire. And so it's disingenuous of him to say it's just a collective responsibility.
And obviously the Chief Minister can respond if he's listening. In terms then of the economic strategy, you've identified that there are elements of KPMG's report that aren't being fully embraced by the current government. Anything else that you would want to do differently?
So the economic strategy, I mean, I can give you a whole list here. Sort of alternative policy, but what the what I'm trying to say is that the economic strategy fundamentally is around taxes, is around attracting people. So I was giving you an example of that reason. So I would like to see raised personal allowances, which I mentioned before. I'd like to see a real progressive tax strategy with higher taxes for higher earners. I'd like to see a clear tax cap on and minimum wage increases. I'd like to see tax-free incentives for individuals who take a second job in retail and hospitality sectors. I'd like to see some more focus on business, provide employment allowance credits for investment in training developments, offer rates release on reduction on smaller businesses over a set period. Suggestions to offer employment allowance credits for training programmes, but all of that needs to be underpinned with the Isle of Man government, you know, doing a lot of self-reflection and becoming more efficiency. So that's how you pay for all of these, making it easier for people.
One thing you mentioned there, which would be the headline figure, is you want higher earners to pay higher tax. What sort of taxation rates are you looking at?
It's interesting because in the hospitality forum, the Treasury Minister said that we would have to quite dramatically increase the higher earners, because that we've got so many low to middle earners that actually it's disproportionately. So if you kept them at the same, you'd have to really hike up the higher earners. Now, I don't have, but access to those figures or to that information, but I'd really like to see that information extrapolated, and to see whether we really can have a real progressive tax strategy, because it's something that he has said that's where we want to go. That's where the economic strategy wants to align with. So how do we, ultimately, how do we raise people's incomes so that there are higher earners? There's got to be initiatives around that. So I guess from a different perspective, from the sense of where we are, the economic strategy, what I'm trying to say is we need to do these things before. We're now 2.5 years in. Government needed to streamline. They needed to be more cost efficient before we started to looking at bringing in 5,000 people. There's lots of figures right now that are not accurate about how many are here, how many are in government. There's some really, really struggling figures that I'm quite shocked at. There was ones about the education department. All of a sudden, there were 900 new employees in the education department since 2021. I haven't seen that. So these figures really need to start to be confirmed and become more accurate. So I think that how we do things in terms of the government, it's really fundamental to that economic strategy and how it moves forward. But fundamentally, Phil, just to say, I do agree that we do need more economically active people, but there are other ways of doing that, retaining young people. There are people that are currently here that could go out to work as well. That's a strategy that hasn't been looked at. So it's incentives about getting people back to work. That's where we do support the childcare strategy, implementation of that, but it's moving forward now and getting that done.
So what I heard in that was, firstly, looking at ourselves in the public service, public sector as well, rather than just always looking at the private sector. Secondly, I think we've got a greater emphasis on the local economy and the local firms, rather than always looking at for export firms, because ultimately businesses are people, and we've got to make things good for people living and working and having career opportunities in the island. That leads on to the third point, which is we've got to address the challenges with living on the Isle of Man. So the Chief Minister is right, and the Council Ministers and Tim Ward is right, to focus on air and sea connectivity and housing, because they are the biggest problems about living on the Isle of Man. But we've also got more problems beyond that. We've got other issues of infrastructure we've got to address, and so we want to focus to change the expenditure from the economic reserve away from, you know, just per se enterprise type stuff, to actually focusing on addressing the real challenges in the air and the sea and the infrastructure and housing. So more direct expenditure on those things to address the real problems for real people living real lives, wanting real life opportunities and career opportunities here, rather than constantly looking for something else to happen from outside.
I think the Manx public probably are sick of hearing of the word strategy. And you know, it's the implementation plan, or it's certainly what are we going to achieve? And I think that's where I really would encourage the government now to really say, what are we going to achieve over the next 2 years? What can the public really expect? And is this the right direction we're going? Because if we need to just shift course just slightly or more, or, it, you know, importantly, for the people that are here right now, then we should be doing that. I think it's really, Chris mentioned earlier about, prioritising people-centred policy. That's what we really need to focus on here on the Isle of Man. That's come across certainly and from the hospitality sector, and I say just them, but that is the feeling across the small businesses, self-employed people. It needs to be more about people-centred for them.
So going back then to housing, because that is one of the new the revitalised new priorities of the government. You mentioned earlier, Chris, that you disagreed on policy with the Chief Minister. I suppose the intimation there is that you didn't have a free hand as chair of the Housing and Communities Board. What would you have done differently? What did the Chief Minister overrule you on? How could things have been different than they currently are? Because many people, talking to Manx Radio, talking to me, tell us that there is still a significant housing problem on the island, and the last 2.5 years have done little to dent it.
Well, the latest panacea is to latch on to the Housing Association for the DOI houses. What matters to people in the area we represent is the Douglas Council 10-year housing strategy. What matters to people in Douglas is to get houses that they want to buy and they can afford to buy, rather than small apartments in tower blocks for key workers arriving on the island in the public sector. So that's one thing that we'd have done differently. Two things, in fact. Firstly, the objective assessment of housing need ought to already have been published. It's a closely held document alongside the viability assessment. We know what we now need, because presumably, but I haven't seen it, Claire hasn't seen it, but lots of people obviously have seen it, and we're now making prognosis and plans for the future without having seen it. And secondly, we ought to be listening to Douglas Council and working with Douglas Council for public sector, and we ought to be doing things differently. Moving on to the next one, when we've both had a degree of responsibility for housing along the way, as has Julie Edge, our big plan would be things like mid-rent housing and working with the local authorities. I spent hours out on the road with the housing authorities planning in terms of fixed-term tenancies, rent rates, rent fixing, getting amount of money for maintenance, you know, being begged in one sense to allow some of the houses in the public sector to be used for mid-rent alongside instead of just government having a scheme. That's another area I differ. The big weakness in the Chief Minister's position is he just ignores the empty houses and the vacant properties, and we needed to have been having positive policies which are laid down and were worked up in the Housing Communities Board, but they don't fit the pro-developer small houses in greenfield sites narrative that's happening at the moment. We actually need to do the difficult stuff, which is bring those vacant properties and empty properties and substandard properties up to the right level that the people want to live in them with incentives, rates, tax, and so on.
And what sort of incentives and what sort of taxes?
Well,
for
instance, if we take landlords, we could come up with some sort of agreement over a couple of years. We will help you do it on the basis that you keep them in tenanted format in terms of the first time buyer scheme. At the moment, you have free rein at the end of the 10 years to sell the property to whoever you want. Across quite often in local authority areas, you have to sell them back to the scheme to help the next generation of first time buyers. We looked very closely in the Housing Communities Board at officer level and politician level at improving the processes for renting, setting standards, conveyancing, property management. They're practical things that will make a practical difference to people, and there's no talk about that. That's all in the too difficult pile. It's much easier to just say bring in Andiam Homes or another housing association over from the UK will solve everything, which it just won't, because you know what matters is how rents are set and the quality of people's houses and the standards by which property managers operate and those sorts of things, very practical things.
Yeah, and I think Chris has hit the nail on the head there. There are lots of schemes that he's mentioned that we should be pushing forward. I have a view that in my sort of small experience of being a politician, I've done a lot of research on jurisdictions around the world, and social housing certainly doesn't have to be this sort of last resort, and that's where the mid-rent housing scheme is I think are really important. You know, we've had a situation over the last, you know, five 10 years where property prices have gone up, rental prices have gone up, and it's very difficult and very competitive to find a rental property. And if we're certainly attracting people from not on the island, or we're attracting young people to come to bring them back home, there isn't the properties there for them to rent or to buy. It's really difficult. So one of the thoughts that I have in terms of, and I have said this probably from day one of this administration, I would like to see more social housing and mid-rent housing schemes. I can't tell you a number because I haven't got the OHAN report, and I can't tell you what our need is, but I know there's a need, and I know that if you injected more housing like that, certainly that could help drive down the price for the private rent, which is really a position where we want to start to get to, and to give more renters more opportunities to be able to rent, whether you have dogs, cats, you know, animals, etc., and it's, or children, and it's not so competitive as we find as I hear it is. So I think that's, for me, that's really, really important. The government does need to step in, and it does need to provide this a form of social more social housing and more mid-rent housing schemes. And as I said, it's not, it shouldn't be the last resort. We should be making passive houses ways so that, you know, some of the low earners, medium to low earners on the Isle of Man, you know, the cost of living, it helps them to have a passive house. You know, that's where we should really be looking towards, and trying to give those people more money to save, to buy their own property in the future.
So just to add to that, Claire said government should do these things. I don't think we've necessarily think it should be government directly. It could well be a housing association, but the housing association's got to give credit where credit's due, and Douglas has got an incredibly well put together, ambitious plan for the eastern region for housing, and it's been sitting with DOI and Treasury for 2 or 3 years. We haven't seen it formally because there's no point sharing it and getting people excited. You know, but politically for us, we want to be working DOI, Douglas, with Ramsey, Castletown, the ports, wherever, Peel, to actually put together a nationwide housing strategy for the right houses, for the right people at the right time, working with the private sector to deliver them. And at the same time, we want to be using private development to actually finance this with us. You know, what the Chief Minister will see in Jersey is that the Jersey Housing Association makes a lot of money because it's a relatively easy business renting out houses at a profit, but you know, you have to then be providing money through the social security system to allow people to pay for those increased rents, which is also what happens in Jersey. And he might have missed that bit. And at the end of the day, the Isle of Man is not Jersey. In Jersey, everybody's probably statistically twice as wealthy and twice as rich each year as we are in the Isle of Man, so it's a different situation.
I mean, I've spoken to some quite good links in the UK for developers, and they've worked on worked with housing associations, and the UK, that their position right now isn't great in terms of the housing associations. So, you know, they're in a situation where they have to raise the rents, and if they don't raise the rents, then they can't maintain these properties, and they're no longer these cost effective options, and they're asking government to step in. And so that's a really risky situation that we could end up being in. We could just end up having a whole another arm of what could be local authority, and I'm not necessarily sure whether that's the right move, but certainly the Douglas City Council have proved that they can regenerate, they can rebuild, and I'd be really interested to see that.
Just a simple comparison, you know, Douglas City Council provided us with 60 fully fledged apartments in Peel Road for just over 11 million. We're getting less than 40 small studios, 1-2 bed studios in the nurse's home, Manx Development Corporation, for slightly more money. It is a couple of years further on, a few years further on, but you know, the public needs to have honesty about those situations. And at the moment, where in the patch I represent in Douglas Central, you know, we have got the elderly persons complex in Westmoreland Village to think about, and we have got to think about Spring Valley in South Douglas. We've got to think about Williston in North Douglas, and all around the island there are these projects. And we want to be practical about it. We're not ideological. It's private and public doesn't matter. What we need is the right quality housing and the right amount of public revenue being spent to make sure that we achieve that appropriately.
Okay, well, we've got 3 minutes, less than 3 minutes before the end of the programme now. I mean, I've heard, listened very carefully to what you've had to say, and there's some interesting ideas there. How are we going to, what are we going to see as a result of your collective, I don't know, the Three Musketeers, the Rebel Alliance, do you actually have a title?
We don't even have a name. We have a way of working. So we do work together on preparing questions and supplementary questions. We do work together on motions, and we've got a track record now of delivering motions, and we have thought through the order in which of those motions, and we are going to begin to start going out in public, and we would like to come back with Julian, with others even, to actually talk about some of the more specific subjects based around public interaction that we're going to have
Yeah, I think it would be really important to focus on certain areas and come back with certainly highlight to the public that these are the areas and these are the directions. This is where we're sort of starting. Well, I say starting. I've been talking about the island plan and the budget for the last 2.5 years. But it's really, you know, thank you for giving us the opportunity to kind of come and say this and hopefully give the public the confidence in their backbenchers, not just obviously the council ministers.
So the questions we've got in Keys next week are not random. They're along the lines that we want to go in. So for me personally, my big issues have been about the gas field and doing it right. I move more into MUA and the public provision versus private provision for energy. I've got a thing about the sea services and making sure we have the right, because that's very important for the island. And I've got a thing about arm's length bodies, and these are all important. They're coordinated. Claire's got her own topics, as has Julie, as has Jason and all the others who are there working on alternative policy behind the scenes.
That was MHK's Claire Christian and Chris Thomas. So what do you think? Will the new group be a positive force for good in Manx politics? Are they merely formalising an opposition to government at a time that we desperately need our politicians to be pulling together? Is our system of parliamentary scrutiny and government big enough to accommodate such a group? Perhaps you think it's long overdue. Are we going to see any real change delivered by the three Manx musketeers? For now, I'm Phil Gorn. Go to Maius and Geistachrom. Thanks for listening.